Welcome to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. The second confirmed case of COVID-19 in Columbus appears to be the first case of community spread in the state's most populous city. Dr. Myshika Roberts is Health Commissioner for Columbus Public Health. Welcome back, Dr. Roberts.
Hi, how are you? Good. Thank you.
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. How does the first community spread diagnosis change the equation?
Well, you know, we've been saying for some time that COVID-19 was going to come to our community. And on March 14th, we shared with the public that it had arrived in our first confirmed case. I think that individual had traveled outside of our area, and the thought was that they brought it back to our community. They were exposed while traveling. This new case shows us that this individual had not traveled anywhere, likely was exposed to it right here in Columbus, and then diagnosed here. So it just it reiterates that it's here. Anyone is susceptible to it, and we all need to take the necessary precautions to prevent getting infected.
You know, we had a caller last hour that we didn't get to the call, but I wanted to ask the question about if we tell everybody to stay home,
social
distancing. But if people basically stay home, how do we test to know how many people have it?
Well, you know, that's a challenge, but I think the message really is stay home if you're sick. So if you're sick, you should stay home from activities and you should seek medical care. I mean, that's been our message all along. If you're sick, call your provider and seek medical care. Your provider is going to do an assessment over the phone based on your symptoms and determine whether you should get tested for the flu, whether you should get tested for COVID-19, or whether you should just stay home and you likely have a common cold and will recuperate, you know, at home with rest and over-the-counter medications.
How do you know when you're sick?
You know, this is not the cold that just causes a little scratchy sore throat and you feel like, okay, I can still kind of do some things. I don't feel best, but I can still kind of do some things. When you have the flu or when you have COVID-19, you feel bad. You want to lay down. You don't feel like doing activities. And that's when you need to pick up the phone and call your healthcare provider or call a provider and get an assessment done and figure out what's the best thing for you. The fever is really the hallmark sign of not only COVID-19, but the flu. And that's a temperature over 100.4. You can also have a cough. You can have some shortness of breath, and you can have body aches. That's very different from a cold that causes a headache, a runny nose, maybe a sore throat. The symptoms are vastly different.
They keep talking about this cough. Now, I have a residual cough from 2 months ago, and I'm very paranoid about coughing in public. Mm-hmm. But what kind of cough are we talking about?
Well, again, we're talking about a cough in conjunction with the other symptoms.
Okay.
So it's not just a cough. A lot of people have a cough or a sneeze because of allergies.
Yeah.
But it's a cough in conjunction with the fever, again, a temperature over 100.4, and some shortness of breath and maybe some body aches. So it's all of those symptoms together. If you just have a cough alone, that's likely not COVID-19.
It is Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher, and I'm talking with Columbus Public Health Commissioner Dr. Myshika Roberts. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. On Tuesday, Ohio Health Director Dr. Amy Acton talked about how a surge of COVID-19 patients could overwhelm Ohio hospitals. What do you think people need to understand about what that means?
Well, our hospitals are prepared. We've been planning for this for a long time. Whether it was H1N1, whether it's COVID-19, we've been planning. That being said, our hospital systems only have so much capacity within the confines of their walls. Now, they have planned for what if they have to expand beyond that and what that means. At this point, we have a lot of individuals going to the ER. Some of those are the worried well. You know, they have the sniffles, they have a headache, they're going to the ER. Again, if you're sick, if you're so sick that you can't keep fluids down, you're having trouble breathing, you are starting to get delirious, you're passing out, you're fainting, that's when you need to seek care in the emergency room. Others who just have a scratchy, sore throat, no fever, maybe a little headache, they need to stay home, self-care at home, call their provider. Otherwise, our hospitals will get overwhelmed, especially our ERs. But right now, our hospitals are doing okay. But that could change in the drop of the bucket as we identify more individuals here in Franklin County that have COVID-19.
What does the declaration of a citywide health emergency do?
The declaration of a citywide health emergency? Mm-hmm. So that's what my board declared. The public health emergency was declared on Friday. And that gives myself as health commissioner some more authority to do things like isolation and quarantine of individuals who have COVID-19. It also gives me the ability to mandate testing of individuals who might have been exposed, might be symptomatic, and are refusing to get tested. It also gives me the ability to mandate they get some kind of care if they're refusing care. Most importantly, which we haven't had to use yet, but obviously we've seen Dr. Acton use it, is it will allow me, if need be, to prevent ingress and egress to a certain area. So, for example, if we're all familiar with what we've heard about in New Rochelle, New York, where they've created a containment zone and they've really prevented people from coming and going into a certain area, if need be, this public health emergency would allow me that authority as well.
What are the most common questions you're hearing from the public?
The most common question and the concerning question I'm hearing from the public is, I can't get tested for COVID-19. There's not enough testing out there. And I really want to correct that statement. So COVID-19 testing at this point, just like the flu testing, is only meant for people who are exhibiting symptoms. If you are not exhibiting symptoms, COVID-19 is not for you. Testing for COVID-19 is not available for you. If you are exhibiting symptoms of COVID-19, and again, those symptoms would be fever, cough, shortness of breath, maybe some body aches, there is testing available, and there's a few different places you can get tested. If you're sick enough to require going to the hospital and needing to be hospitalized, the provider can send a sample to ODH Laboratory. If you're not sick enough to require going to the hospital, but you seek medical attention through your healthcare provider, and if you don't have a healthcare provider, you call your local public health department, there are outpatient, what we call swab stations, available throughout our community that we could send you to get testing as an outpatient. This is done in a drive-up fashion where we can get you tested. And by the end of this week, I anticipate all of our hospital systems will have a swab station operational.
At this point, you don't want to publicize where those swab stations are. You want people to be directed to them?
They have to be directed by their healthcare provider. They have to have a note from or an order from their healthcare provider. It's not just like anyone can drive up and say, I want to get tested. There's a process you have to go through to get screened and make sure that you meet the criteria for COVID-19 testing.
And let's see, Claudia in Columbus, you're on the air with Dr. Myshika Roberts. Hi, Claudia.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
Yes, my question is about the statement that was just made about when people should consider self-quarantining for 14 days. The impression was that only if you're exhibiting all symptoms of a fever of 104 or higher.
100.4 or higher, yeah.
I'm sorry, 100.4.
100.4,
yeah. That seemed to me a quite conservative kind of response compared to some of the things I've been reading from the CDC, which is that individuals certainly may not exhibit all symptoms, and especially some younger people may have very mild cases that don't exhibit all symptoms.
Okay.
So
all right.
I was wondering for clarification on that.
Okay, good question. Dr. Roberts?
Sure. So let me just make sure I level set everyone. There's a difference between quarantine and isolate.
Okay.
You isolate someone who is ill or have symptoms, you quarantine someone who's been exposed to a known case of the infection, like COVID-19.
Okay.
So the recommendation to stay home when you're sick is stay home when you're sick. Whether it's a runny nose, a cough, a sore throat, stay home when you're sick, because you never know when that could escalate to something more. So that's when you are, quote unquote, isolating yourself. You're sick, you're staying home. If you have COVID-19, you are ordered to stay home by your provider and the public health department if you're stable enough to be at home. Some people have to be in the hospital during some of that time. Again, the quarantine is staying home when you've been exposed to somebody who has COVID-19. And then there's a big difference between isolate, quarantine, and social isolation or distancing, social distancing. That's just trying to avoid other people so you're not exposing each other to various germs, not knowing whether it's COVID-19, the common cold, or the flu. So I just want to differentiate those three areas. There's isolation if you're ill, there's quarantine if you've been exposed to someone who has COVID-19, and then there's social distancing. The recommendation for many of us now, and what we've heard from our governor, what we've heard from our leaders at the national level, is social distancing.
Okay. Claudia, thanks. You know, these questions, they're, everyone has them. I think reiterating the distinctions are super important. Ellen in Ashland, you're on the air with Dr. Myshika Roberts. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was just in Riverside, and Dr. Lowe, my gastroenterologist, had to do a sphincterotomy on me, and I was in the hospital from Monday till this last Saturday.
Wow.
And I want to know if I should be tested, because I'm at home. I'm isolated at home.
Dr. Roberts?
Sure. So again, the testing for COVID-19 is meant for people who are symptomatic. So when you say you're isolated at home, I'm assuming you mean you're practicing social distancing at home. But if you're not having any of the symptoms, again, for the most part, the symptoms are fever, cough, shortness of breath, and maybe some body aches, then you should continue to stay home. If you develop any of those symptoms before you seek care, you should call your healthcare provider.
Are people who have been hospitalized, like Ellen was, for unrelated purposes or unrelated to COVID-19, are they at a higher risk of catching it because they were in the hospital?
From what we know thus far, no. Our hospitals are doing the best they can and using appropriate PPE and doing terminal cleans and cleaning the facilities regularly. They've really increased their cleaning of the facilities. So, no, there is not an increased risk of being in a hospital any more so than there is of being out in the general public.
Okay. Ellen, I hope that helps. Good luck and with your recovery from your surgery. And one more call for Dr. Roberts. Colin and Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Colin.
Yeah, hi, Ann. I kind of had two questions, but I'll just ask the first one.
Okay.
We know that there's been a big shortage of testing, and it's just sort of starting to catch up now. But there's really little information, and what information exists is conflicting about the percentage of people that are testing positive that are actually being tested. I'm just wondering if you have any specific data on that. And I guess I'll listen off the air.
All right, Colin, thanks a lot. What do we know about how this is spreading at this point, Dr. Roberts?
So we know the number of people we are testing. We do have that information. And then we know the number of people who are positive. I think as testing becomes more available, and I want to make it clear that testing is available through private labs in Franklin County. If you go through your healthcare provider, again, as I said earlier, all four of our hospital systems have the ability and the capacity to do testing through private labs here in Franklin County and the surrounding areas. So the idea that testing is limited, it's not limited. It's just that you have to go through your healthcare provider or a healthcare provider to make sure that you're exhibiting symptoms that could be consistent with COVID-19 before you get testing. Testing is not to be done on individuals who are not exhibiting symptoms.
If I just have a temperature over 100.4 and that's the only symptom, maybe a headache, should I call my healthcare provider?
If you're concerned, yes, you should call your healthcare provider.
Okay.
And especially if you fall in one of those at-risk groups.
Gotcha.
And those at-risk groups, and these at-risk groups are groups that we're concerned could have complications from COVID-19. They're not the only ones who are at risk of getting COVID-19.
Okay.
They're the ones we're concerned about complications. And again, just to repeat those at-risk groups, individuals who are over the age of 60, individuals with underlying health conditions like heart disease or lung disease and diabetes, and individuals with a weak immune system. And now we've recently added pregnant women to that as well, because pregnant women generally have a weaker immune system while they're pregnant.
Dr. Maishika Roberts, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you must be, and it's very much appreciated.
Oh, I'm glad to do it. It's important information that we've got to get out to the public so they understand how to protect themselves and their families.
You bet. We're going to spend a few minutes coming up talking about what telemedicine means and how to make it work for you. So stay with us. We have a few more minutes left. This is Wellness Wednesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Wellness Wednesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Federal officials on Tuesday announced that Medicare would immediately expand coverage for telemedicine to help seniors avoid exposure to the novel coronavirus. Dr. Wando Olewola is a professor and chair of the Department of Family Medicine at Ohio State University's Wexner Medical Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
So telemedicine, is there a trick to this? I mean, what should people know as we embark on this new era of telemedicine?
You know, first of all, I just want to make sure we're really clear on what we mean when we're saying telemedicine.
Yeah.
And just so that everybody understands and we level set, that telemedicine, and it's often interchangeably used with the word telehealth, but when we're talking about either one of them, it's really the remote delivery of healthcare services and clinical information using some form of technology.
Okay.
And so that means that the person delivering the service and the person receiving the service may be connected to technology and not necessarily in person. So I just want to make sure that that's clear, that we're all understanding.
Phone, TTY, Skype, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you think people are ready to do this? I mean, do people know enough about how the process works, and or what do you think they need to know?
You know, honestly, we've been growing telehealth services across the country for the last decade. It's become increasingly available to Americans, largely for convenience and access barriers to other forms of in-person healthcare and efficiency. I think what's happened here with this epidemic is that it has now put a spotlight on telehealth, because it's not necessarily just for convenience or just for access. It's also for necessity. You know, we need it now more than ever to unburden our healthcare systems, you know, as Dr. Roberts was just saying on your show, and to enable us to social distance, to, you know, implement social distancing, and also reducing the risk of transmission between clinicians, patients, communities. So now it's become more of a necessity than it has been a convenience, but it has been present for quite a while in the United States, just that we've had a number of barriers to fully leveraging it.
A lot of people are going to be listening to this and going to say, it just doesn't seem like it'd be as good as being with the doctor in person.
Certainly understand that sentiment. And I will say that, just to be clear, there are still many forms of healthcare that should be done in person, and not every single thing is amenable to telehealth. However, with the growing number of mobile health solutions, remote monitoring tools, self-tests that patients can do at home, different types of diagnostic tools that are available through technology, we've been able to make healthcare a little bit easier in the home or outside of the office space. But that definitely doesn't take away the fact that some healthcare just needs to be in person.
So what's your advice to people who have never done this before? What do they come armed with? I mean, when they get on the phone or they get on Skype or however they're doing it, what do they need to bring to the table?
Sure. Well, we're fortunate that so many people are accustomed to connecting to their families using FaceTime or Skype or talking to people on phones. And I will say that I don't think people should be stressed about the technology because they probably are already using some sort of technology that would make telehealth easy for them. What it really requires is, you know, a broadband connection that enables you to have, you know, good wireless or, you know, satellite services. But think about it as almost like having another application on a device, a smartphone technology or, you know, telephone that you use already, and you would just be interacting with your healthcare team through that medium.
Should you maybe write down everything you want to tell the physician or whoever you're seeing, the nurse practitioner, or whoever you're going to be talking to beforehand?
Yeah, so here's some things that could make it much easier for people that, do embark in engaging either through a telephone, electronic visit, or a video type visit, is be sure you've got your questions or your thoughts or concerns written out or kind of in whatever device you have beside you before you begin the actual encounter. And then also be aware that it might require photos. So, for example, if you've got a rash and you want someone to take a look at it and you're doing it through a video visit, through some sort of video technology, for what we do at Ohio State and with a lot of our telehealth services, is we ask people, is it okay if I use the system to take a picture of that rash so just so I can have it on file and we can follow it over the next few days?
Uh-huh.
And so being aware that you might have to do things like that also during the course of a visit, which you might not normally do if you were in an office.
Well, I'm out of time, Dr. Ola Iwola, but I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
That's Dr. Wanda Ola Iwola. She's a professor and department chair of family medicine at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. We're turning now to special coverage at NPR of the something out of the White House press conference for the day. So stand by. And thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.